Welcome to the Irish Pagan School podcast. Your hosts are authors and co-founders of the Irish Pagan School here in County Waterford, Ireland, Laura O'Brien and John O'Sullivan. Fáilte.
Thank you, Eva Fáilte. Hi, hello and welcome. John O'Sullivan, the Irish Pagan School, and we're here with this week's check-in chat and coffee talk, or coffee thoughts, actually, because what's going on in my mind at the moment is kingship in Ireland, specifically associated with the Dagda. And it occurs to me that he's king in our world, but also king in the other world. So if you're interested in that, do stick around. But before we dive into that thoughts and content on it, I'd like to invite you to pop on down and make sure you're on the mailing list, to make sure you're connecting with our resources and picking up the great kind of resources we have available. All you got to do is go to irishpagan.school/free. And there's almost a year worth of kind of classes, teachings, kind of guided meditations. There's a lot of kind of stuff there to get your feet under you. But then also irishpaganschool.com, like, you know, the school itself, so many classes, so much teaching available there. And all the purpose of all of it is really to provide more information, provide a deeper kind of more authentic connection to Ireland's mythology, culture, history, spirituality, and pretty much lived existence. So yeah, speaking of that, like, you know, getting back to our kind of topics and lived existence in Ireland, kingship in Ireland is an important kind of thing in our ancestors' time. And like, depending on which way you want to explore the narrative, you know, of course, Ireland is a democracy now, the Republic of Ireland. Part of the island, Northern Ireland, is under the monarchy of the United Kingdom, or Britain. And that's where, like, you know, you get a lot of difficulty because so many of the abuses done to Ireland was done in the name of the monarchy. And we were conquered, we were oppressed. All of that was done to us by monarchy, by royalists, or those against the royalists, like the various levels of plantation. Some of those were done in order to get people out of the country or to prop up powers and like relationships within, like, you know, those who were loyal to the crown and such throughout time. And like, Ireland was parceled off and given to these other people. And so when you talk about kingship and you talk about, like, you know, monarchies and association with Ireland, it gets a little bit sticky, unless you go back before the, probably you probably have to go back before 1169 with the arrival of the Normans. Even then, you know, it was still Gaelic Ireland. There were still kings in Ireland, but the arrival of Strongbow with his Norman invasion, supporting like a king, one of the kings in Leinster, and then his marriage to that daughter in Waterford, actually, really cemented the power structure of Normans on the island. But before all of that, we have multiple different kings. At one point, kingship in Ireland, there was like 180 different kind of kingship based on tribal lands, based on kind of the various tribes and families and connections. If we go back not even that far, we have one of the more famous kind of kings in Ireland, a guy called Brian Boru, who toppled the kind of power structure of Ireland with huge advances in kind of strategic thinking and conquest. Because before that, there was the Northern and Southern Enields or O'Neill families, and they were the ones who had transferred the kind of the kingship of the there was multiple different kings, but then there was one overarching kind of king. Now, it's not high king or whatever like that. It's not mono rule in many cases. It was kind of tribal rule and then affiliations and loyalties to almost like a feudal kind of noble powers, which was transferred back and forth between the Northern and Southern Enil families for good 100 years. Actually, I'm going to drop a recommendation here. The Irish History Podcast with Finn Dwyer. Absolutely fantastic resource. I would definitely recommend someone listen to it if they're in any way fascinated about this or even casually interested, because it's presented really well and it's really, really great information. But Brian Boru's arrival, his kind of growth in power and his kind of program of conquest really allowed him to kind of dominate many of the other kind of kingships and then get them under his kind of rule. And he became probably the one and only person who fully conquered all of Ireland, but then lost it pretty quickly with the Battle of Clontarf. And I don't have the year of that in my mind. But looping it back to before that and how that connects to the Dagda, way, way back into our mythological time frames, we talk about the Tuatha Dé Danann arriving into Ireland, and they come in as descendants of those who had emigrated. So they arrive as immigrants, descended of those who had emigrated, and they're returning home. So it was the Numidian tribe initially, and then the sons of Nemeth had fled oppression in Ireland. They had kind of grown in their tribes, their people had expanded outside of Ireland, and then they had come back. Initially with the Firbolg had come back and they took over an empty Ireland at that point, and the two of the Danann arrive in. And the king at that time was Nuada, who became known as Nuada Argetlov or Nuada Silverhand or Silverarm, because of a harm that was done to him, a mortal wound or blemish was put upon him in the first battle of Moytura. But we know that there was kingship, there was rule. And during the mythological period, there was one king. There was one king that ruled that tribe. And from Nuada, it was Bres. From Bres, it became Nuada again when Nuada was restored. From Nuada, it became Lu. And then from Lu, it became the Dagda. And the Dagda ruled in Ireland for 80 years. And after the Dagda, there was a couple of other people who did rule as well. And then eventually, at the end of the mythological cycle, it was the Dagda's grandsons, his three grandsons, the sons of Kermit, who were Macul, Machecht, and Magrin. And they were the three kings in Ireland at the time of the Sons of Mill arrival. And even then, when the Milesians arrived, they segmented Ireland into multiple different sections to rule over by the various sons of Mill to give them authority and power. Now, the reason why we look at Dagda in kingship is that he ruled for 80 years, which was a very substantive amount of time. Lu only actually ruled for 40 years. And his relationship with our world and with the other world made Ireland a very abundant place, a very kind of fulfilled and just place. And what's also interesting is the seat of his power. He chose not to rule from Tara, which had been Bres's place of rulership, or Nuada's place of rulership, which had been kind of the habitual place. He ruled from a place called Ushnok. And I've yet to put my feet on Ushnok. I look forward to the day that I do get to. But his kind of shift of like away from the previous power structure is a very fascinating kind of decision. But it's in and during his time as king in Ireland that we have a story that talks about the settling of the manor at Tara, which is the Dagda kind of portioning out the various different various different landholdings to the other gods of the Tuatha Dé Danann, the other kind of notables. And it's in this that we find another element of the story, which is where Aengus, the son of the Dagda, comes to him about not having had a portion of land given to himself. And that's when the Dagda is like, well, the land I really want you to have is not available right now. It's owned by Alkmaar. And then we have the story about Aengus kind of tricking Alkmaar with the Dagda's support out of Brú na Boinne, the brew on the Boyne, which is the bend of the Boyne River, which includes Newgrange now at the moment. But the Dagda makes up for the loss of Brú na Boinne to Alkmaar by giving him land from his own kind of thing that was equal in value and equal in wealth. And that kind of sets up Aengus in Brú na Boinne, but of course, across the river, it sets up Alkmaar with equally abundant and beautiful kind of wealthy lands. Now, from there, we have a very much a display of the structure of Ireland, but the authority of the Dagda to be able to parcel out, these are all the lands, this is how everyone gets, you know, their place to rule over. And that's the structure that's maintained pretty much down, almost you could say, during, from the mythological right the way through Ulster cycle, right the way through Finian, right the way down into the historical cycle when we get to the cycle of kings, or the kind of glossary element of the cycle of kings, where it lists out all the kings, who they were and when they ruled and what they were noted for. So this kind of sectioning or parceling out of the lands and the tribal elements with the relationships and the fealties that were owed, we can kind of point right the way back to the arrangements that the Dagda made laying out the landscape of Ireland. But where things take another kind of step is, of course, the fact that he portions out the she, and they're specifically said to be the she. And now she, as in S-I-D-H-E, also spelt S-I-Fada, are the people of the she, the hollow hills themselves, the places on the landscape of Ireland that are connected to the other world. And so the Dagda being able to give the rule or these kind of arrangements or these lands, including these she's and the authority over that, to the tribes of the Tuatha Dé Danann is almost setting them up as the Éire Sí, those of the noble Sí in the other world. The last kind of piece of information we can kind of point at that really settles down firmly the authority of the Dangta comes from another story known as the Aisling Engusa, or Engus's dream, or Engus's vision. And in this, Engus, the young son of the Dagda, ends up with a lovesickness on him. He's completely like tormented by visions and nightly visitations of a beautiful woman who comes and plays a drumming for him on a timpan. It's said to be a timpan. It more likely may be a bowron, because of translations and Irish words. But she plays for him every night. He doesn't know who she is. And like he falls into a full on love stupor over her. He's not sleeping apart from when he's visiting with her, and he's not eating, and it doesn't go well. And so Boann, his mother, comes to visit him. She sees he's not well. She calls for the druid. The druid kind of comes, looks and goes, yeah, that's a lovesickness, and we need to find out who this actually is. And so Boann then goes to try and find out who it is, goes to connect with everybody to try and find the answer to who is this person that, you know, Engus has a lovesickness over. And it doesn't, she can't find it. She doesn't go well for her. Like, she does everything she can. And then she comes back to the druid and he's like, okay, well, we need to go ask the boy's father. We need to go ask the Dagda. And they rock up to ask the Dagda, Boann, and the druid. I think his name is Finnegan. And they ask, like, okay, well, this is the circumstance with Engus. Like, he's in this lovesickness. We need to find out who this woman is who's visiting all of the time. And Dagda's response first is initially, well, why are you even asking me? Because, like, Boann knows everyone that I would know, kind of putting her in and showing us his perspective of Boann, this woman who he had a relationship with, a lover's tryst with, and conceived and brought into the world, Engus. But it's not, yeah, he puts her on par with him for knowledge and connection. Like, why are you even asking me? Like, Boann knows everyone I would know. But that's when Finnegan goes, well, actually, it's not because of you and what you know. It's because of your position of authority over the she, over the other world. That's what we need from you. Because at this point, Finnegan has identified that it's not someone of our world, it's someone of the other world. And the only way to ensure that there is some kind of arrangement or some kind of finding out of this is with the Dagda's authority. And so, you know, the Dagda then goes, he sends word out to Beau Jarrag, who's the son king in Munster at this time. They then find a little bit more information that someone may be in that area that fits the description. They end up in the Sí in Cruachan over in Connacht, in and around Maeve's territory. And that's where he approaches the king. The Dagda approaches this king and says, listen, and it's an interesting kind of discussion in this Aisling Engusa, because the Dagda doesn't come in hard saying, you fucking owe me shit and it's authority and I have the right to demand this information. He comes in much more amicably and he's like, I'm having this circumstance. Maybe you can help me out. Maybe you can fulfill this information for me. But the king of the Sí at that point in this area, the local king of the Sí there, knows he has to give some answers. He's bound to kind of give some answers to the Dagda, but he doesn't fully fulfill it. And that's where it actually does include Maeve and Aliel in the story, because the Dagda, Boann, Finnegan go to Maeve and Aliel, and with their support, they threaten the Sí in Cruachan that it will be destroyed. And it's only at that point that the king fully comes forward and is like, listen, the reason why I can't tell you who it is because she has more power than I do. And I can't tell you where she is, but I know where you might look. And that's where we begin to find out about Kerr. Kerr being this woman of the other world, and the message is sent again to Beau Jarrag to try and find a specific lake where a bunch of swans would kind of settle once a year. And they do find out because apparently Kerr spends a year in the form of a woman and a year in the form of a swan. And so Engus is actually brought from Brúna Poyne across the island to this lake when they find it. And in the story, the swans come down, and there's this beautiful swan in this circumstance. I know I'm pretty much telling the entire Aisling Engusa, but Engus calls out to her by name. She hears the voice and she realizes that this is the man that she loves. And then they actually spend the rest of their life together, 1 year as, like, you know, embodied in people form, and the other year embodied as swans flying around our world and the other world. But there are multiple different aspects of this story that show that Dagda does have the authority, but the way he uses the authority of kingship is very interesting. It's never presented in a dominant kind of you owe me fealty, I'll take what I want and you have to just give it to me kind of way, or, you know, anything like that at all. Every time we hear talks about him, it's about hospitality. It's about people coming, people being taken care of. And then even though he has the authority over the these kings of the Shi in the kings of the other world, the way he uses that is by saying, listen, we have to have a conversation. We need to kind of figure things out here. And he has a right to approach them, and they have a responsibility to acknowledge him and to kind of speak with him. So that has been my thoughts on it, and the idea of around kingship. We do know that a lot of the stories of kingship and association with Ireland include an element of the goddess of sovereignty aspect, where a king in Ireland must be wed to a goddess of sovereignty. And the king is there to advocate for the people, but the goddess of sovereignty is there to advocate for the land. And so it does add on a lovely extra question, which I might come back to at some other time, is, does the Dagda's rule for 80 years in Ireland, how does that reflect on his relationship or his partners? Because we know his wedded partner is the Morrigan, and how we view her in the aspects of a goddess of sovereignty. So if you'd like to know more on that, if you're interested in me talking about that, maybe let me know in the comments below. Check in with us as ever. Join the mailing list, a whole lot of free resources on a regular basis there, and great ways to kind of build and begin to deepen your connection to Ireland and your spiritual path and the mythology. So until next time, look after yourself. Take care. Agus slán. Goodbye.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please leave us a positive review in your podcast listener. Then head over to irishpaganschool.com and enroll in one of our free or paid courses. Slán go fóill, and we will see you next time.